I'm Lyman, and I'm here with my great friend Marcel, and together we do the Jazz and Grass podcast.
Yeah, that's very true, man. There's actually one other thing that we do, too. We do the Jazz and Grass Instagram page, and there we record a new lick every single day, a new guitar lick, that is. And we post two licks on Friday. Every day alternates between bluegrass and jazz. What's not the lick?
It's been a lot of fun. How long have we been doing this now? 3 months? 4 months?
Yeah, a good amount of time. We're up to 600 now, right?
Yeah, we passed the 600 mark. Just a couple days ago. It's pretty dope. But if any of you have come from the Instagram page to this podcast, we did want to let you know about a new thing we got going on, a new way to reach us. You can call or text area code 724-257-1046. I'm going to just repeat that again, make sure I get it right.
Yeah, go ahead.
724-257-1046. Call or text. That's the Jazz and Grass hotline. Ask any question you want. Say hi. Yell at us. I don't particularly care, but it's a new way to get a hold of us, and we will probably play your response on the podcast. Your question on the podcast and give our response.
And I love that you've kept the phone number secret from me for all this time. I didn't know it yet, and you just read it out loud, and I'm over here like writing it down. Like, oh man, I'm gonna call this thing so many times.
Again, that's 724-257-1046. How do radio people do that without screwing it up? Like,
yeah, it's awkward. I think you got to do it really fast. I think that's the secret.
I did it.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. I'm glad that you got that all set up. I can't wait to see like what horrible things people say, you know?
Literally the worst. Expecting, you know, death threats, everything. All the bad stuff.
Anyway, even though this is a guitar podcast and we do the whole, we talk about a lot of guitar-related things. Today, we're going to change it up a little bit. We're going to talk a little bit about bass guitar.
Oh, yeah. I don't think the knowledge here could be limited to bass guitar. Just bass instrument in general, bass synth, bass guitar. That's about it.
Well, sometimes we have to cover those roles too. I mean, even on guitar, right? You have to like take over that a little bit. Go ahead.
I actually do have my upright bass, but it's like too far away. It's like 10 feet away, so I don't want to deal with that right now.
Yeah, everyone at home, just imagine that Lyman has an upright bass about 10 feet away from him.
Mm-hmm. I am reaching, but I can't touch it.
Yeah, man, so are you going to give us some kind of like funky bass line just to get us into this? This is great. This is like the best technical difficulty I've ever seen. I can't hear your bass. I can only see your bass face.
Oh no. That's a I've made a mistake. There you go. Has that messed up anything in the recording? No, I don't think so.
Oh, there it is. Yeah.
Yeah, before we started recording, I was just sitting here, like, just jamming out on the bass, and I had no idea he wasn't able to hear it. Just sitting here in silence, like an...
Yeah, well, you don't move a lot, so I just thought you were really feeling whatever you were doing. Yeah, I think it's important to say that Lyman isn't just some guitar player that's holding a bass right now. You actually, you know, primarily are a bass player. Well, I mean, at least for all this time until we started doing Jazz and Grass more frequently, right?
Yeah. that's where I did the majority of my work, playing upright and electric bass in all sorts of different bands. The first band that I played in with Marcel, I played upright bass. And it wasn't until I moved to Arizona that I started actually telling people I was a guitar player, because I got, you know, the opportunity to sort of rebrand myself a little bit. I wasn't, you know, sort of pigeonholed as just a bass player. Not that that's a bad thing, but I've put a lot of time into what it means to be a bass player and not just a guitar player holding a bass.
So what can you say, just from, I guess, from a bass player's perspective, what do you think, like, the role of the bass is, and what would you tell to bass players before we even talk about guitar players? Like, what is your job?
I feel like the job of the bass is to bridge the foundation of the harmony with the rhythm that's going on. So kind of a bridge between the drummer and the guitar player in most bands. That's what I would say.
It's like double foundationally, because you're like, you know, rhythmically it tends to be, you know, a little bit simpler than what the drummer's doing. So you're like foundational part of the rhythm, and, you know, your harmony tends to be simpler too. You're like, it's like a big old like war drum or something.
Yeah, it's just sort of like the kind of the bridge between harmony, melody, and rhythm. And one of my favorite jokes of all time is, have you ever heard the bass player so bad that somebody noticed? So it's my opinion that the bass player needs to be a foundation, and a foundation isn't something you notice until it's bad. And I have a lot, all sorts of opinions on, you know, flashy bass playing and whatever. I like to play flashy sometimes, but it's mostly about the foundation and just grooving hard.
Yeah, what's a, maybe what's equally interesting is, like, what are, you know, what's a common way that people mess up that job?
I'll give an example that I saw a guitar player do when he picked up my bass. Just playing a line, like. Kind of like, you know, you're down here, you're playing your groove, and then you get the opportunity for a fill, and you just go way up here and lose it for a second. And it really has nothing to do with where you're at. But, I mean, you take that line and play a fill like. There's all sorts of stuff you can grab with where you're at. You don't have to play lead guitar lines on the bass.
It's all about finding the first position of the pentatonic scale above the 12th fret.
Yep. If you know that, then boom, you can play lead bass. And there's like two lead bass jobs in the world, and Victor Wooten has one of them. So good luck.
Yeah. I like how, you know, it's funny that you kind of pointed out that they have two jobs, when in reality, a bass player that does a good job of covering one of those things actually does quite a bit as a bass player. Like, is, you know, above the 50% of bass players. you know, I would love to have a bass player that just played in time, and, you know, if they messed up their parts, that would be... just the fact that they were playing in time would make me feel pretty good. In fact, I've played with bass players like that before. At least you're consistent. All right, cool. So that's kind of, I mean, as you describe it, you know, your role of the bass and your opinions about that. What about maybe like the role of the guitar player when working with the bass player? I actually feel like, you know, before you go, I want you to answer and everything. But I feel like this is a real moment of, like, failure on, I feel like the majority of the time it's a failure on the guitarist side, especially when it relates to time and rhythm. That a lot of times when guitarists go to play, they have this opinion about how they sit on top of the mix and they exist in this upper area. And for some reason, they feel like they get to play with time in just this grandiose kind of way. And you really don't. I mean, things are, unless it's like a very specific circumstance and you're very specifically playing sloppy for a reason, things are going to feel better when they're in some kind of groove. They don't have to be time aligned. I'm not talking about a grid or anything, but like things should feel kind of locked in. And I feel like when guitar players and bass players aren't working well together, that's like 90% of the time what's happening. Like if you have some groovy bass player, I'm thinking of like a funk line where you have like, you know, super groovy, like syncopated bass line. And then you got like those little like poppy, like higher up on the strings, you know, these little like, you know, little pops like coming in.
Yeah.
That's actually pretty hard to do on guitar. Not because it's hard to play or anything, but just because the majority of what you're playing is a rest and you have to pop in and like nail it in time. And it has to be like meaningful and good. And people ruin that kind of playing all the time. Like if you hear a live band that isn't a funk band try to like pull off that kind of rhythm and the bass player and the guitar player have to interact in this way, most of the time it feels like the guitar player just like busts into a crowded bar room and it's just like, hey, everyone, you know, that's what their part sounds like when it comes in. It just like comes in kind of awkwardly, like a little bit out of time. And then it just like disappears somewhere in the corner when it falls asleep.
Kind of like the Kool-Aid man.
Kind of like the Kool-Aid man. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I've been extremely fortunate to play with guitar players with great time. That's usually the thing I'm looking for, like most when I'm choosing musicians to play with is great time. But if a guitar player is playing, you know, sloppy, playing with the time, like unintentionally, that's one of those things I just gotta tune out, find somebody else to lock in with, whether it be, you know, a melody instrument, the drummer, keyboard player, whatever. I try to find whose time like I'm feeling best around and just really, really play with that person. That's how I do the thing.
Yeah, completely. I mean, I do that. I do that with bluegrass when high tempos are going on. Normally, the person you can trust the most is the bass player. And not because, you know, bluegrass bass players are amazing or anything. I think a lot of times they're kind of, well, in a lot of genres, bass players are like the friend and they join the band and it's like, hey, man, you can play bass. Just learn how to do it. But yeah, bluegrass bass players, since they just have to play quarter notes, well, you're playing eighth notes in your strums and then 16th notes in your breaks. They're the most stable people to listen to. So a lot of times if I'm taking a break and, you know, we're approaching like 150 or 160 and I'm playing 16th notes, yeah, I would rather look at the bass player's hands and just like it's like a visual metronome. It's like watching the light flash, you know, and I just really clearly see where every downbeat is. And I'm like, cool, I'm not going to get out of time. And if anyone else gets out, that's their bad because I'm right here.
I got a funny story about, you know, the light on the metronome. I was at a jam session once, just three people, and we were playing together. And we had the metronome. We were playing something ridiculously slow, like 60 beats per minute. And the drummer set the metronome to hit on every downbeat, so once every four counts. But he didn't account for the light. And being the little jerkwad I am, I cheated and was looking at the light. And he was feeling it until he saw my eyes and then got upset and like put a piece of paper in front of it so I couldn't see it anymore. You're ruining the spirit of the exercise.
Yeah, it's funny how you can like perceive a groove just from a light. You can
there are all sorts of things. Like you don't have to just use your ears as like your information gatherers. There's information coming from everywhere, visually, auditorily, and like probably get like a little bit of tactile information, like especially if you're playing real loud, you can sort of feel that deep bass or sometimes a kick drum. And that actual physical feeling is more information that you can use to help achieve your goal.
Yeah, it's very true. Totally unrelated, but a cool metronome you can do, or a cool exercise you can do with a metronome is to set it super low, like you're saying, and have it only click or light up or whatever on beat one. So you're only getting these really long intervals before you get another flash, and see how well you can subdivide that using all different things. Like, you know, can you count quarter notes to that? Can you count 16th notes to that? Could you count 8th notes to that? And then triplets as well, right? And when you switch back and forth in between, it's cool. It's like a little bit of a auditory illusion when you get used to feeling some kind of like duple meter versus some kind of like triple meter. I encourage everyone to do that if you want to get better at subdividing in your mind. Mm-hmm. That's one of those skills too, where I'm not sure I've met like a talented musician who didn't have an easy time with that. Like who couldn't, you know, do that pretty casually. I think everyone I've met that's ever struggled with that a little bit, it was a pretty good indicator of like just general knowledge.
Well, I struggle with that still to this day.
No, you don't. I refuse to believe that.
I do like to do things like dotted eighths and like fives and sevens.
Oh, yeah. So hard mode.
Hard mode, yes. I am drinking coffee today. Oh, we should break for a second and do our reoccurring segment. What am I drinking out of?
Oh, no. Oh, I'm not going to say that, man. Lyman's drinking out of a trashy mug. Let's just leave it to their imagination.
It's a university mug, and the university is the name of a planet.
Yeah. It's that nice, is. Though.
No water, coffee. I had a late night last night.
Do you remember that stein that I had that said pirate grog? And it had like a skull on it, and then on the backside it had the recipe for pirate grog? I used to drink out of it all the time. I used to pour whatever I was drinking in there. Non-alcoholic or not, I just used to drink out of this cup because I thought it was funny. It was dumb.
Grog, is that related to glog?
Oh, you remember glog.
I do remember glog. How could I forget?
Yeah, if you ever want to make glog at home, which is not a real drink, people will tell you that it's a real drink, but it's a made-up drink. People will tell you it's a real drink, being me. I will tell you that. It's like sangria, a bunch of fruits, and then like some hard alcohol, some like whiskey and stuff. You just pour it all in a big old pot and you boil it for a while. And you take it off and you drink it. It doesn't have to make a lot of sense. You don't have to put a lot of rules on it. It's a very caveman experience to make it. It's different every time.
Mm-hmm. I remember one time we made it, and I pulled up like a recipe for like actual punch, like five, like there's a ratio, like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I was thinking, let's put some champagne in here, but we don't have any champagne. How about the champagne of beers?
Yeah, nice. Oh man, I haven't had some of that stuff in a long time.
Glog or the champagne of beers?
The champagne of beers. Although that's a cheap beer. That's not what you want to drink.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's not actually the champagne of beers.
Maybe it says that on the can.
Hmm?
So it says it on the can, so it has to be true.
It's the sparkling white wine of beers, what it is.
It's not anyway.
From that region in France. Wow, we are going off the rails
so
today.
Far off topic. Oh man. Let me tie this back together. Lyman used to play a lot of bass. Lyman used to drink, And that's how we're rolling back into talking about the bass guitar. Look at that.
Mm-hmm.
Well done. Just tying up all those loose threads.
Tying or burning them with a lighter.
Anyway, yeah. So I don't know. I think a cool way to push this would just be to talk about some more interaction kind of elements, whether that be like melodic or rhythmic.
I'll just play some funk stuff, and because that's what I did for a long time. I was a funk bass player. I'll play a little line and like kind of break down what's going on rhythmically and harmonically. So that was just a small sort of funk figure. It's got lots of syncopation in it. So like you got that bop, bop. So it's like, so that's like a kind of a cool rhythmic interplay. And the chord I'm over is just like C7. And so I'm just playing notes from that chord, except for that B note. Major 7 over a dominant chord, but that's just a passing note.
So a lot of times these lines, it seems like they're avoiding downbeats until they like return to a downbeat. Like you continuously get this like really strong feel of like where one is, especially if you listen to like James Brown's rhythm section, like all of their grooves work like that. You like really clearly get like a one and then they delay it for like a measure or two measures. And then you really strong, you get that return again.
Yeah. Like Bootsy said, it's all in the one, baby. Get that one and then do some other stuff and then one. Like,
is that how you count like funk music?
One. Yeah. And the one thing I try to do when I'm thinking about bass lines is being super, super consistent with my choice of notes, my choice of rhythms. And like just adding little variations, like once every, you know, four bars or so. I've seen a lot of bass players like start off with that sort of. Which is fine. It's all cool. But like, I like that real consistent thing. Like to me, that's just being a strong foundation.
That's like what a drummer has to do. You have to play the same thing over and over again, and it's thankless for like that like, you know, one measure where you get to like show off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a huge thing. I feel like a lot of especially new players miss the mark on. Like there is great joy and great bliss in playing super consistently. I think of it as like a game. Like, how much restraint can I have tonight? And I find like the more tired is a word? I don't think so.
I'm getting tired. Everyone at home, check your dictionaries.
I'm getting tireder as we speak. But the more tired I get, the more my restraint goes down, and I just start adding little extra stuff like every two bars or maybe every bar. But
It's different too when you're playing with like friends or people that you're close to, and it's almost like a gag to show like lack of restraint. You know, to overplay is funny and a joke, and it's fun to have people that you can do that with, especially if you're playing live shows with them as well. Because then when you're, you know, privately playing, you do all this like goofy stuff, and then when you get on stage, suddenly everyone's like, you know, monked out.
Yeah, restraint is huge. Like, I've also played like a fair amount of rock bass, and you get a lot of this stuff going on. And that might sound simple, but there's a lot of stuff going on there, and maybe I'll break that down a little bit.
Yeah, are you using your fingers too? You're
yes.
Not a pick guy.
Yeah. I use a pick all the time, but
oh really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Probably because I played you were playing upright bass when we played together.
Yeah. I just find like there's something like with the sound, like when you're using round wound strings, like if you use a pick, that's a very specific sound. A lot of times I can't get that sort of sound with my fingers. It's not because, you know, the line's too fast, I can't play it with my fingers anymore. I just want that pick tone. Yeah, there are lots of camps on the bass. Like, is a pick okay? Is a pick not okay? Somebody told me, like, anybody who plays with a pick isn't a real bass player. I'm like, word?
And you're like, guess I'm not a real bass player sometimes.
And at that point, like, I'm real disagreeable. I'm like, okay, I'm going to play with a pick for the rest of the night.
Yeah.
It's playing with a pick's not like bad or worse. It's just different. It is different. But to go back to that line, the things I'm thinking about are like articulation. Articulation is huge. Kind of doing the bado, 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 bado thing.
That's more about attitude.
Yeah. And I do that little slide. And like making sure that my slide is like absolutely in time as if I played it. That slide is huge. Did a hammer on there. There's a lot of cool things in rock bass. Like, you get to practice your restraint. You get to really, really dig in on articulation and note length. I'll give you another example, like with note length. And I feel like I've heard a lot of people miss the mark on this as well. Let's take like something in G, like bong, 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 bong. When you get that snare drum hit, I often pull off as soon as the snare drum hits, like boom, 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 to kind of let the snare drum breathe. And like when it gets to the chorus, that's when I'll let the note sustain rather than. Note length, that interplay with a drummer, like letting the snare drum breathe a little bit, it's not something like that's really intuitive unless you're really paying attention.
Well, what you're talking about is kind of interesting. Like, I don't know, I'm thinking about time we've spent in the studio recording any like pop or rock kind of music. You know, a lot of times the attitude or what we're trying to convince you is that it is pretty like loose and, you know, it does just come out like this. But then when you're actually getting those takes, there is a certain level of precision that you're trying to achieve. And it's a much different kind of precision. I feel like when I'm recording, I don't know, I feel like bluegrass and jazz as improvisational genres that, you know, involve so much more of that kind of interaction. You know, a lot of times the takes that you love and the takes that are fun, you know, probably aren't perfect. You know, they're probably just like really interesting. And you're like, man, weird thing I did there. That's cool. Let's keep that, you know. And that's not what happens when you record like rock and roll or pop music. You're looking for this consistency. And like you were even saying about the slide, like I make sure the slide is perfect. In more improvisational stuff, you don't really give a damn if the slide is perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it would be great if it was, but if it's not, you know, the take's probably still good.
Yeah, it might you know, be something like a little bit interesting. Like you might have, instead of hitting that slide like right on the eighth note, you might have hit it like on a triplet. I don't know.
Yeah, but those kind of discrepancies in like a rock recording, they suck. They seem amateur-y sometimes.
Yeah, they're really distracting to me, and I think that's a big part about playing bass. Don't be distracting. You're playing a song, and you want to bring the song to life. You want to play the spirit of the song. You want to serve the song. And if you're distracting from that, that as a bass player, you are, in my opinion, doing your job incorrectly. Don't at me.
Would you consider like taking your shirt off or like almost losing your pants being distracting?
Touche.
Love it.
Last night on my gig, like, I almost lost my pants. Not intentionally this time. They just almost fell off.
Unrelated, yeah. Unrelated pants losing.
Yeah, I had to go into a power stance just to keep them on.
What's up with you and pants, man? You need some suspenders and the belt.
I hate belts. Like, I just hate
suspenders,
belts.
Man.
Yeah, I'll wear suspenders and a t-shirt or a Hawaiian shirt. You know, suspenders and a Hawaiian shirt wouldn't be too bad.
You just need some like elastic in the waistband.
I feel like that would be worse, much worse.
We get you some jeans that have elastic around the ankles and in the waistband. Yeah, that'll be good.
Yeah.
By the way, just for the record, I have a pair of jeans with elastic on the ankles and the waistband, and they're acid wash. They really take me back. It's a real Marcel in 1995 kind of look.
Back when we were, you know, skinny.
Skinny. Yeah, man, I was so fit when I was a baby. Like, you wouldn't even recognize me.
I was always
a chubby kid. That's not my joke.
we were looking at old video of us like a week ago, and we were just weren't thinking of, well, of course we were thinking about the music, but the thing that you know, got me was how skinny we both were, like comparatively. Yeah. Things
That's
happen
crazy,
when you
man.
Get married.
Life just goes right into the toilet. And you're like, man, I was all skinny and hot.
I saw a video for me last night. I'm like, oh my God, I need to eat less pizza.
You need to take up running again, man. You were the running champ.
What?
Yeah, man, you had this, like, thing. I remember you telling me about it, about, like, running and, something about running in the morning, and you had a routine that was like super funny to me.
Oh, I would run, and I would run on my dad's treadmill every morning, like a mile or two. This was only like a 3 or 4 month type of deal. But while I was running, I would watch Superbad every single day. Just pick up where I left off, or if the movie finished, start it over.
Man.
Every single day I watched Superbad. And then I started smoking cigarettes, and that was the end of that bull.
Oh, man. Yeah, at least cigarettes make you cool. Just kidding. Don't smoke, kids.
No. I don't wish that unfortunate habit on anybody.
Yeah, I'll turn your guitars yellow, too.
That's true. That is true.
Well, you want to keep moving, man?
Yeah. This is the Off the Rails podcast.
Yeah, this is worse than the yet to be released emergency podcast.
Are we gonna keep referencing that
until it gets released? Should. Yeah. Did we talk about it before?
I think we mentioned it in passing.
Oh yeah. Well, there is an emergency podcast that we recorded, and if anything ever goes wrong, you know, that's the one that gets posted. I won't spoil anything. Just know that it's a very strange podcast, and I honestly can't wait for it to go up.
Almost had to throw it up this week. We're doing this one really last minute.
Yeah, we are. So yeah, let's keep going. How about Would You Rather? Yeah.
Yeah. Is there anything more about bass?
I mean, yeah. I mean, if you wanna, go ahead.
Yeah,
just cut out this conversation.
Don't play like just pentatonics all the time. That's not a bass line.
Wait, play something faster than that. You're like halfway to Victor Wooten. Can you play Isn't She Lovely with harmonics now? I'm surprised we got that far.
Yeah, just when in doubt as a bass player, like if you're thinking, should I play that extra thing? 80% of the time, just say no. And you might ask yourself that again, like very shortly after. 70% of the time to that question, say no. If it happens a third time, then like you might actually be on to something. Like your first impulse is likely bad. Your first impulse is likely bad, but once you like break through, like maybe you'll have something interesting and meaningful to say that won't be distracting on like your third or fourth impulse. I don't know, man.
I feel like those, you know, what you're talking about, like doing that little extra something. Yeah, for the most part, you know, I look at it like, hey, if everyone did that extra something, it would kind of be chaos on stage every four bars. And like that moment to like fill in comes and like 20 people are like, you know, you don't actually want that. However, you know, if you fill in and someone notices and says something, then yeah, that's the greatest affirmation of like, if you like that, I will do it again. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's how I feel about it. You know, rather than just ask someone, you know, do you want me to do this thing? I'd rather like put it in a performance or like in a practice session, someplace where it's noticeable and see if anyone says something. And if no one says anything or someone gives me the stink eye, then yeah, don't do that. You know, if someone says they like it, then I'm going to do it.
Yeah. It's easy. Music is very easy.
Yeah, it's just, I think it's really easy to be kind of a, I don't know, my dad calls it a jock musician. It's really easy to kind of like try to strong arm people into what you think is right or, you know, what would be cool for you. And that's not really how you make any kind of music.
Mm-hmm.
And people who think that are just kind of wrong. It's not, yeah, it's really hard to like make music with the like machismo attitude. You're like, you're doing something pretty delicate and like pretty, you know, stereotypically not manly. So I think trying to overdo that whole side of it is kind of dumb. It's kind of counterproductive. Mm-hmm. You know, it's better if we were all kind of without that kind of ego.
Yeah. Music is a very weird thing. Like you're getting 4 to 20 to 100 people together to create one piece of art. Imagine if you got 3 painters together to try to paint one picture on a small canvas. That'd be absolute chaos.
Yep.
I don't know if it would be, but that's just what I'm assuming would happen is absolute chaos. So yeah, like you got to be super sensitive, super aware of what's going on around you, and flexible. You got to be like a tree, firm but flexible. For when
the
winds
ideal
blow.
the ideal other musician would be like, I don't know, like Troy from like Star Trek Next Generation. real deep cut for anyone out there. Yeah. Hope you watch TNG.
DS9 was my favorite.
Yeah, you know, I just skipped past all the episodes that weren't Troy episodes. I just wanted to see her get impregnated by psychic aliens. No.
All right. For real this time, let's play a game.
Yeah. Why don't you you lead us off?
All right. This is Would You Rather. The rules should be self-evident. Here's one. Would you rather play to 10,000 people with 5 out of 10 skill level rated players, or play to 10 people with 8 out of 10 rated skill level players?
Oh man, I like how you didn't change the ability of the players very much. Like you didn't give me a 10 out of 10 option. Yeah, that's a tough question. I feel like the real like musician thing I'm supposed to say is that I'd rather play with the better players, and that would probably be like socially more fun, but like business wise, yeah, why would you turn down a situation to play with, to play in front of more people? And I think that's what I would say, honestly. I think I'd rather play in front of more people from the business side of things. I had a friend who, I'm not going to name names or name band names, but yeah, I'm just in my mind, I'm trying to think how I could tell this story without saying names.
We're like the Bill Burr podcast, we don't name names.
So yeah, the point is, I have this friend who did a lot of work on my guitars in the past, and he refretted my main Martin and did a bunch of stuff that I wouldn't trust other people to do. When you refret a guitar, it's pretty scary to watch. So that was fun. But he plays excellent guitar, and he played with a lot of bands that went on big tours in town where me and Lyman used to live. And he got a call one day from a manager of a bigger kind of modern folk band, think like Mumford & Sons, but I will tell you that it wasn't Mumford & Sons. And they were playing to, you know, a sold out, you know, big old concert hall kind of show somewhere in like Chicago or something. And they were like, hey, our lead guitar player is in Africa doing some kind of benefit thing. I don't know. And, you know, we'll fly you out. Will you play like 3 dates with us? And then we'll fly you back. And, you know, you'll get, you know, what would have been his pay. You'll be compensated generously, blah, blah, blah. And you know, you have to come out and learn our set really quick. And he said yes, and he went out and did it. And he told me kind of casually that he wasn't super impressed with their musicianship or anything. But, you know, he wouldn't have in any way have said no to the opportunity. You know, it wasn't. he probably would have had a better musical time, like hanging back home and playing with his buddies. But just saying yes to that kind of thing is just something you say yes to, mm-hmm. You know.
I would play to 10 people with 8 out of 10 rated players because I don't care about much.
You're that person, man. That's why we do this together.
You got one for me?
Yeah, man. I don't know. By the way, that was a good question. That was almost exactly the same as one that I was going to ask you.
Crap. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. would you rather give up cold turkey, diminished chords, or augmented chords?
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. I think I have to go with augmented.
Yeah, I thought you would say that.
Yeah. I do love whole tone. I do love whole tone, but diminished is just so versatile.
Great. Dominant chords and like 2-5-1s, minor 2-5-1s.
Mm-hmm. Even major 2-5-1s.
Yeah.
Passing chords. I'd be really sad about it and kicking and screaming, but I have to go diminished over augmented 9 times out of 10.
You won't get any of those real spooky chords anymore, though, man. Those augmented chords.
What does a major 7 sharp 5 fall under augmented? I think it does. It's got a sharp 5. But does a minor major 7 fall under augmented?
That's an interesting question. I have no idea.
Because that'd be like...
I don't think it does, because you're kind of approaching it from a different direction, right? It has to do with intent a little bit.
It's got an augmented triad in it. It has an augmented triad in it.
Oh, man.
It really depends. My answer changes. If I can't use minor major 7 chords anymore, then... I might have to go diminished. I might have to get rid of diminished. But if the major 7 is okay, then augmented can take a back seat.
Oh, man. Yeah, minor major 7 chords. Those are those real spooky chords.
Yeah. Also known as like the spy chord.
Yeah, very much so. Have you ever done... Me and Nakos had this conversation one time where we just tried to find all the different, like, good examples we could of James Bond chords. And, of course, everyone knows that that's, like, one that comes up a lot. But then there's other kind of attitudes to it, depending on what notes you add, like Beach Bond or whatever. And I think the favorite one I found was this one. That's so Bond.
What voicing is that? Can you... break that down for me?
I have no idea what it is. Honestly, I really don't.
Just note names.
It is an augmented chord. With that on top. But I think more than anything, it's about the, with the actual fifth from that note. I think it's about the, just about how the notes are arranged that makes it seem, it's about the inversion that makes it seem like most James Bondy. Mm-hmm. Trying all these different ones and like trying to find what's the spookiest. I'm trying to remember the one that Nakos liked, but I don't remember what it is at all. I don't know. That was my favorite though.
Oh, I love those chords. If anybody listens to my lo-fi tracks, you're about to hear a lot of minor major 7 and major 7 sharp 5 because I got on a little bit of a kick there for a second. I'll go again.
Yeah, hit me.
Actually, no. What was your answer? What would you get rid of, diminished or augmented?
Oh, I think I would get rid of augmented chords. I mean, for the same reason as you, diminished chords are just more versatile. But I mean, you know, what other chord was I going to give you? They kind of always get paired together.
Hmm. All right. Would you rather play with a 7 out of 10 rated player with a crappy attitude, or a 3 out of 10 player with a great attitude?
Oh man.
The big part for me on these ones was like figuring out what rating would be the most difficult.
Yeah. That's a good question because I think I've been in both those scenarios. I think that I would pick a 7 out of 10 with a bad attitude in this case.
That's why we work well together, I guess.
Just because, you know, I don't know where I rank on the scale, but, you know, I'd rather play with better people, people that are just going to surprise me and make me, you know, kind of feel bad about my own playing rather than people that aren't going to do that. I'm not saying that, you know, bands can't have people like that, because I think having one of those people in a band is actually super useful. Like someone who's just like, you know, super well-intentioned and just happy and like go lucky and like willing to work that side of things where everyone's in a bad mood because something just happened with the sound guy. And this one person is like, I'm oblivious. And you're like, all right, cool. Like things are going to be okay because we're not all angry. What about you?
I'd choose a 3 out of 10 player, surprisingly.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Bad attitudes just kill everything for me. Because if somebody's not having a good time and takes it out on me, I'm going to make sure everybody's not having a good time. Because I'm probably that player, but I'm trying really hard not to be. I'm just trying to surround myself with people with good attitudes. Because I spent a lot of time being that guy with the really crappy attitude.
Yeah, right. Totally.
I'll take good attitudes. 10 out of 10. Don't at me.
I love the idea of you like, you know, you're like the co-pilot of an airplane or something. And the pilot's like, man, I hate this stupid job. And you're like, you hate this job? Just, just take that thing into the ground.
Well, you're not wrong.
All right. I got one of those kind of like, you got to get high to get with me on this question. So I'm going to say the question, then I'm going to pass you the bong and you take a hit. Okay.
Okay.
would you rather give up? Lyman's doing this like squinty high face right now. Would you rather give up being able to make music, but you can still listen to any music you want? Or would you rather give up listening to music, but still be able to like play and hear your own music that you make?
That's an easy question because I already do one of those things.
No, my high question.
No, I would pick being able to create music and listen to it, but it would be going down like a little bit kicking and screaming because then I wouldn't have anything to reference. But my big thing is like I don't really want to be a performer. I just want to help create music. Like that's what I want to do. I like the creative process of making music.
Yeah.
So sorry, like. If you were expecting this to be like a really hard answer for me, no, super easy.
I was expecting us to like pass that thing around at least like 2 more times.
What about you?
Yeah, I think I'd probably go the same way. I'm not sure I could give up like creating music. I don't know. I think we've both gone through periods where we're not very good music listeners. I think that's pretty normal too, for people to just like, for your ears to get a little tired, especially as a musician, and you to just, you know, take some time off before you really get into it again. Yeah, it's also, it's pretty easy to get kind of just turned off of the scene based on like repetition and other stuff. You don't want to hear that same thing again.
Speaking of tired ears, like, do you have the thing like where if there are four conversations going on with you, like in a relatively close vicinity, and you're talking to somebody, you have a really hard time focusing on that one conversation?
Yeah, that's tough. Tough stuff.
It's really difficult for me because I hear four conversations going on at the same time. And like, I'm a music listener. I try to listen to the big picture, everything at once. And that doesn't work for conversations. It just makes me look like a jerk, like I'm not paying attention. I'm just trying to pay attention to everything and failing.
Yeah, I hear you. All right, hit me with one last one, and then let's move on, yeah?
Can do. I've got like... Oh, this one. Play with a drummer or tempo arbiter, somebody who like his job is keeping the time, that rushes, or a tempo arbiter that drags.
I'd probably pick rushes. I feel like rushing is much more acceptable than dragging. In that, I think playing like a long set with someone who drags is like slowly having your life force sucked out of you. Especially when, maybe this is just me as a bluegrass player, but especially when you kick a really fast song and it's going fast, and you watch the first person get to take a break at a high speed, and then like a minute later when the song comes around to you, it's like 20 BPM slower, and you're like, you know, like, where's the challenge here? What happened? What went wrong? I wanted to play the fast thing too, and I didn't get to do it. And then, you know, you're bitter for the next song. No, but yeah, I think that dragging is much more of a problem than rushing, unless you're like just crazy speeding up. But I think most people that rush aren't. I think most people that rush are just excited.
My answer has like layers.
Yeah, go ahead.
If I'm playing bass, I would rather play with a tempo arbiter that drags, because drummers think they're the tempo arbiter when I'm on stage with a bass, and I think that's not true. I think that it's me, the bass player. And if I'm playing with somebody who drags, I feel like it's a lot easier for me to just stay the course and you know, have them pick back up with where I'm at, which you know, I'm going to believe is correct, but I have put in a lot of metronome time and played a lot of metronome games, and I record all the time to click. So I feel very confident with where I feel the time is. But if somebody's rushing, it's real hard to just stay back because, like you said, like it's excitement. And if there's excitement, like focus can be lost. So like I'm sitting here, you know, just playing... as the drummer's speeding up, like paying little attention to, yo, Doug, here's the time. But if I'm playing guitar, like rushing's fine. Like dragging would be a slow death.
Yeah.
But if I'm playing bass, like somebody with dragging, somebody that's dragging is easier for me to pick up than somebody that's rushing.
Yeah, that's a pretty interesting perspective, though. That one would bother you more on a different instrument. I see that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's my answer. I got your answer.
I like that. We're feeling your internal mental checklist.
So, now that we've got the answers, let's move on. Because I am the master of everything and the arbiter.
I love it. Yeah, it's good. I just get to hang back. Whatever happens.
What have you been working on?
Yeah, it's a good question. I feel like we've kind of opened up a lot of our categories when we talk about these things, so I'm going to possibly open this one up even further. I haven't been working on anything really guitar-related. I've had a lot of other stuff going on. But if you don't know me personally, I do a lot of graphic design and like web design and everything else for all the projects I run. And like the Jazz and Grass stuff, for instance, I designed all of that. And my girlfriend just finished writing a novel. So she finished her first book. And I've been doing the design for her covers and now a new design for her website. And it's going to be, you know, just design work everywhere for a while for me. But on top of that, I've been working on designing a new website for myself for a long time. And I've really been playing with the idea of doing some kind of subscription model or something different than what I do now. And I just don't really know the direction I'm going to go. But, you know, I have a lot of ideas about how it could work and how it could be better and how people could get more out of it. But I don't know. What do you think? Would you want to run a subscription level site?
Yeah. Once I have, you know, more stuff to say that is like been said by me, like, you know, either a video or a piece of writing. And like, I kind of get down that, that workflow and streamline it. Like, yeah, I would love to have a subscription model. I actually subscribe on Patreon to a guy named Ulf Vakenius, Swedish jazz guitar player, and he just posts little tidbits of like his playing, and sometimes he just does like a little 2-minute lesson, and I shoot him $5 a month, and it's like I get this lessons with one of my guitar heroes. And it doesn't.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Yeah,
it doesn't hurt that he used to look like Jim Gaffigan, like to a T. It was hilarious.
That's what I like about the subscription model stuff is that people get a lot for, you know, for their money. I mean, I like the idea of running it as a business and also like, you know, subscribing to it myself. I don't know. I feel like I want to give people, you know, more options and more content, but do it in a reasonable manner. You know, the problem is that, you know, I can't put, you know, all of my energy into something like that without actually making some kind of living off of it. And luckily that means that everyone has to pay very little for that to happen. that's the genius of it. It's wonderful.
Have you thought about doing like an hour and a half live stream, like once a week for the $10 tier? That's sort of like a big old group lesson. Like everybody asks questions and it's like they're studying with you, but like for really cheap a month.
I've thought about that. And I've thought about testing that out on my YouTube channel too, going live on my YouTube and seeing what happens. Maybe we should do that too. We could go live on Instagram or something.
Yeah, that'd be a ton of fun.
I don't know. Talks for another time. What have you been working on?
Since I have my bass in my hands, lots of bass stuff.
I like that. You're so full of it. Go ahead.
Actually, I have. Like, I just recently joined a new cover band, so I had to learn a bunch of stuff. But we play, one of the songs we play is Alanis Morissette's You Oughta Know. And fun fact, Flea recorded the bass on this. And I will so humbly say I made the bass part better.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No, I didn't make it better, but like I know I spent a lot of time talking about restraint and like really dialing in, but like I made this bass part a lot busier. because we're essentially a three piece with a lead singer, guitar, bass, drums, vocals. And so, like, I feel like I have a little bit more room to fill out the sound. So the actual bass part is something like. And then it gets a little busier. But what I've been playing with the one guitar part, because there are quite a few guitar parts and other sounds layered throughout the track, what I've been playing. You might recognize that as like sort of the example I played earlier. And that's why I played it, because it's been weighing heavy on my mind. It's interesting going from that sort of funky, syncopated bass line to like the real rock. Like, so it gives me opportunity to do different things and kind of sort of try to nail two different styles in one song.
That's nice, dude. That's super cool.
That just got me back on the funk train. So trying to find interesting ways to place 16th notes on the grid after, you know, you hit that big old one. Everything's on the one, baby.
All right, with that, let's call it. Let's get out of here.
Yeah. Where can the people find you?
Yeah, so once again, my name's Marcel. All my stuff is Lessons with Marcel. The big place is YouTube. I post a new video every single Wednesday. And if you watched my video from this week, it was all about jazz and grass. So there you go. The other places you can find me are Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And then you can check out my website, lessonswithmarcel.com. That's where you can sign up for Skype lessons and find a bunch of free stuff. Yes, and then, of course, there's the thing we do together that we should probably mention again. We run the Jazz and Grass Instagram account, where we post a new lick every single weekday. I post on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Lyman posts on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. We post twice on Friday because reasons.
I'm really scared of odd numbers.
And we alternate every day between bluegrass and jazz. It's super fun. We just cracked 600 followers. Check it out. See if you like it.
Yeah. And when we hit 1K, we're going to do a swip swap.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait for that.
It's going to be funny.
I'm going to post the best jazz licks.
It's probably going to make me quit. Throw everything. But yeah.
And then you'll find all the sources I stole them from.
you can find me at LymanLipke.com. I haven't updated the website very much, but you can see all the stuff I do on Instagram. There's a link to my SoundCloud, and it's got every single thing I've uploaded. I upload a new lo-fi hip-hop track every Tuesday and Friday, which is just like a little chord melody, some funky bass, programmed wobbly drums, and a guitar solo. Sometimes I play the changes, sometimes I don't, sometimes I completely disregard them. We just got a phone number that you can call or text, ask questions, say hi, and we'll respond to it on the podcast, unless you tell us otherwise. But that number is 724-257-1046. Again, 724-257-1046. Is that good? Was that good? Phone number announcement I've never done that before.
You can read numbers. You blew us all away.
I can barely read out loud. It's
anyway, yeah. So we'll see y'all next time. Yeah.
Yep. Next time.
Bye.